This week on Terp Weekly Edition, spring breakers headed to Mexico, beware. We'll tell you about a new warning that might alter your vacation plans. Maybe an alternative spring break is more your cup of tea. A growing number of students is headed to warmer climates to help out underprivileged communities. And we'll hear from mental health professionals and some students about Charlie Sheen and his recent outbursts in the media.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a student-produced weekly radio news magazine from the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is presented in cooperation with 88.1 FM, WMUC Radio.
I'm Ken Gardner. Spring break is right around the corner, the time to forget about assignments and midterms and just relax. But as Devin Miller tells us, if your plans include making the trip to Mexico, you might have some rescheduling to do.
Students planning to spring break in Mexico may want to think twice. The Texas Department of Public Safety has issued a warning telling students not to make the trip across the border. In a statement released March 1st, Department of Public Safety Director Stephen C. McCraw said, "Our message is simple. Avoid traveling to Mexico during spring break and stay alive." The University of Maryland hasn't told students to change their plans yet, but with spring break a week away, many students have their own opinions on whether or not Mexico should be scratched off the destination list.
In general, I really wouldn't go to Mexico at this point. I just read something in the news about two people being murdered there, just like gunned down in their car.
If people do choose to go, they should be really responsible, staying in groups, staying near the hotel, like don't go too far away from the beaten path.
From what I've heard, the resorts are like pretty inclusive, so you never have to leave the walls kind of deal. So I feel like if you're safe about it, you'll be all right.
People can get pretty wild, so I don't really see a problem with the fact that the Texas government is deciding to do that.
According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, 65 Americans were killed in Mexico in 2010, and more than 30,000 Mexican citizens have died from drug-related violence since 2006. Junior Kara Rose remembers when her dad worked in Mexico and was constantly followed around by bodyguards. He told her about the violence that he witnessed. Rose says she wouldn't make the trip.
We don't know how their government operates or how these groups are functioning, especially with cartels. It seems almost randomized and you never really know. And a lot of people in Mexico are living in fear, especially with the police chief that's gone missing recently. So for women especially, it's very unsafe, and for Americans, it's extremely unsafe.
Junior Brooke Clemency thought about going to Mexico until she was told otherwise.
My mom personally wouldn't let me go to Mexico for spring break, so now I'm going back to New Jersey and doing nothing. But I feel that, it's better to be safe than sorry, and we really need to take precautions in going out of the country.
The U.S. Department of State advises Americans who do decide to travel to Mexico to stay in tourist areas, travel in groups, and be alert at all times. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Devin Miller.
Midterm week is finally over, leaving one thought on the minds of all University of Maryland students. Spring break. Whether it's relaxing in the sun or helping to rebuild a community, Emily Jacobs tells us how some students are spending their spring break.
It's time to break out the flip-flops, shorts, and warm-weather clothing, as spring break is only a week away. For many students, spring break is a time to travel to warm places and enjoy time with friends away from the stress of classes and exams. Alexa Banda, a junior communications major and former college gymnast, says that her trip to Punta Cana with her friends will offer a much-needed break from the school year.
Well, I've never had a spring break because I was an athlete at my old school, so this is going to be my first spring break in college, and I'm just excited to go hang out with my friends and just have no worries in the world.
While students like Banda are heading to the Dominican Republic and other vacation spots, other students, like senior government and politics major Jimmy Gipple, have chosen to spend their time away from school in a different way, by going on alternative spring break trips. Gipple, who has gone on 3 trips to places like Peru, Boston, and even Guatemala, says that being part of alternative break trips has allowed him to help various communities and have a great experience at the same time.
You're doing something meaningful that's not just going to last that week, but it's going to really, I think, and at least for me, has really stuck with me. And that's why I've continued to come back to the program, is because it was such a meaningful experience for me.
Gipple has not only participated in the trips, but has led 2 of them as well. He says he keeps coming back because of the great and lasting friendships he has gained through these trips.
So it's just so much more, or it can be, rewarding in a different way than than the average spring break trip, something that's maybe harder to get, you know, and you're gonna come away with 15 like friends that you, and you would be just amazed at how close you can get to these people just in the few days or the week that you're there.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Emily Jacobs.
For more information on alternative spring break trips, visit www.csl.umd.edu/ASB. 1.5 men? It just doesn't sound right. But as Brian Hoffman tells us, Hollywood can't stop talking about television's hottest star.
Unless you've been living under a rock the past few weeks, you've seen the interviews with America's latest tabloid sensation, Charlie Sheen.
I'm by winning.
The former 2.5 Men star will not continue his role on TV's number one sitcom after CBS finally had enough of his outspoken comments.
Shut up. Stop. Move forward.
While fueled by the media, there is, however, growing concern amongst mental health professionals that Sheen is mentally ill and unable to completely account for his actions. Jerry Bolick assesses depressed students here at the University of Maryland, and she says there are signs of problems wrapped within Sheen's conduct.
It's possible he has a bipolar disorder, because some of his behavior appears a bit manic, and we know he has a substance abuse issue, which sometimes goes along with a bipolar disorder.
As for students, most find Sheen's recent rants more entertaining than troubling.
He's a really interesting guy to watch, despite all of his problems.
At times it's funny, at times it's like a joke and people just laugh it off, and at other times it's like annoying and like just can't, you know, we get rid of him.
It's entertaining. I'll keep up with it just because it's hilarious.
But is the media coverage too much?
People are making it more of a bigger issue than the media, and I think the media is covering it because of us. Because people are following him on Twitter and retweeting him. I just started following him yesterday, honestly.
For now, Sheen will continue to raise his children with a former model and ex-porn star on his arms. Sounds like he'll need all the tiger blood he can get. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Brian Hoffman.
Still to come on Terp Weekly Edition, the future of journalism on display today, the first of a 3-part series on multimedia news here at the Philip Merrill College of Journalism. I'm Ken Gartner. Starting this week and continuing throughout March, Terp Weekly Edition will be bringing you a 3-part series on multimedia news speaker events at the College of Journalism. Jason Murphy has the first installment in the series featuring a prominent member in the multimedia news community.
The Philip Merrill College of Journalism is putting on a 3-part speaker series called Multimedia Speakers in March. The program got underway Tuesday when Mark Stenzel, the managing editor of digital news for NPR, came to discuss NPR's multimedia makeover. In front of a crowd of about 50 students, community members, and fellow journalists, Stenzel began with anecdotes from the early stages of multimedia journalism back in 1996 when he was a main contributor to the launch of WashingtonPost.com. Since then, Stenzel has been involved in many ventures to adapt media websites to the audience's dynamic wants and needs.
There's just got to be a more efficient way to get news out to the people in all the different ways they want to receive it. We have to be where they are. We have to be where the audience is. And that just requires us to publish simultaneously in all these different places.
He adds that, quote, "One of the biggest challenges is a design problem," and states websites' newspaper-like layout as an inhibitor to being able to convey ongoing stories and changes. But for NPR as a whole, the newer forms of mobile media, such as Twitter and Facebook, have become extremely important in the way they interact with their audience. The difficulty, however, lies in the multitude of platforms NPR must now deliver news from.
The big challenge for us is figuring out how to tell stories on all these different outlets that we have without having to hire bazillions of people to do it. So something has to scale in a way.
Stenzel adds that mobile media can open the door to a new audio experience, and that capability is still yet to fully be tapped. For this new experience, there was an idea that a rising journalist should attempt to be a Renaissance man and excel in every field. But according to Stenzel, specialization is still important and will exist in most markets in the future. But for multimedia news, the emphasis will be on collaboration. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Jason Murphy.
Look out for the second installment of the series next week when the massive topic of sports blogging is tackled by a panel led by the college's own Kevin Blackistone.
Bias in the media. It's a surefire way for a station to quickly lose credibility. It's also being taught here at the University of Maryland as a major vice in journalism. I sat down with Kevin Hannigan, an intern for Special Report, with Brett Baer at the Fox News Channel to discuss bias in two recent news stories. We talked about the Supreme Court's decision in the Westboro Baptist Church trial and the ousting of NPR CEO Vivian Schiller. What did Fox News do differently when covering the Westboro Baptist Church case than the other networks?
Well, Fox was one of the few that I actually saw put one of the Westboro Baptist Church members on their programming. I saw it on Sunday with Chris Wallace. He hosts the Fox Morning Show every Sunday. He had on, I believe, Margie Phelps, who is the head of the church. Fred Phelps, it's his daughter, and she was also the lawyer for the case. And he just did a direct one-on-one interview with her to lead off the show on Sunday.
So let's widen out a little bit then. Let's talk about all stories in general. I know Fox News goes by the motto, fair and balanced. Since you work there, do you experience that fair and balanced effect?
In the fall when I worked for Fox Radio, Same company, same location. My boss, who was training me for the day, he was also training another reporter for Fox Radio who started the same day I did. And one thing he made very clear was, you know, people give Fox a lot of grief for that slogan, but at least with Fox Radio, they're news programming, and if they have a story that includes an opinion of one side, if they don't have the opinion of the other side, then regardless of which side it is slanted, they will not run the show or run the report.
Let's talk about NPR. CEO Vivian Schiller was just removed, and there's the problem with them criticizing the Tea Party. Can they be considered now as an unbiased news outlet?
With the executives that they have and their tremendous biases, I think the programming is probably about as good as it's going to get. But, you know, you've seen, you know, just kind of shady things in the past. The Juan Williams thing, you know, Juan Williams is a pretty big Democrat who'd worked for them for many years and probably the greatest champion of civil rights in the last 30, 40 years in this country. And he gets, you know, fired over a comment that a lot of people thought reflects the attitude of the majority of the country. So I think it was more, his firing was more of just looking for a reason to fire him because NPR was not happy with him going on as an analyst on Fox News all the time.
Thanks again to Kevin Hannigan, a communications major at the University of Maryland and an intern at Fox News. He adds that the latest videos of NPR criticizing the Tea Party and them saying they do not need federal funding to survive hurts NPR's credibility. You're listening to Terp Weekly Edition on 88.1 FM WMUC. I'm Ken Gartner. National Eating Disorder Awareness has come and gone, but programs are continuing. Kristen Foca tells us how education on the illness is being spread on campus.
Diet, exercise, the ideal body type, perfection. These are all thoughts staggering through the minds of many men and women on a daily basis. But when has it gone too far? Did you know 1 in 5 women struggle with an eating disorder or disordered eating? 90% of those women are between the ages of 12 and 25. By comparison, more than 1 million men and boys also battle the illness. It was reported during the National Eating Disorder Awareness Week in 2010 that 91% of women interviewed on a college campus had attempted to control their weight through dieting, and 22% dieted often or always. To put that in perspective, at our school, 47%, nearly half of the University of Maryland undergraduate students are female. That means almost 12,000 women on our campus attempt to control their weight through dieting. This week, former Broadway actress Eva Van Dock brought awareness to our school by performing her one-woman show, Eaten Alive. Van Dock is a recovered anorexic bulimic herself, who brings to life 5 different women struggling with a mental illness in a powerful and sometimes hilarious way. I got a chance to talk to her after the show.
I love it because I feel like
you know, theater has a different way of communicating than a lecture. So it kind of reaches to more of an emotional journey than an intellectual journey, because we all know that there are things we necessarily shouldn't do to ourselves, but, you know, emotionally we don't really believe that sometimes.
Van Dock has been performing the show for about 7 years now in cities all over the country. She has found success in both the show's popularity and effectiveness.
It's just been really effective speaking to students from a different standpoint. And I'm very happy about the fact that a lot of students I know after the piece have gone on to speak to their, you know, counseling services and whatnot after the piece, because it has spoken to them differently.
Resources here in Maryland are available at the University Health Center in forms of group therapy, individual therapy, and nutrition counseling. Although National Eating Disorder Awareness Week has already passed this year in February, the awareness should continue year-round. For TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Kristen Foca.
More events to bring awareness of the illness of eating disorders are coming up the first weekend of April. Coming off a strong 2010 season, the Maryland softball team had to find a way to replace offensive MVP Alex Schultz and find a way to ease the burden on their two dominant pitchers. Tyler Radke tells us how a transfer and a freshman have answered the call.
After falling in the first round of the NCAA tournament last season, the Maryland softball team looked ahead to 2011 and how they could fill their needs. Luckily, those answers were right in front of them. Offensively, Bree Hannafin, a transfer from Baylor, was ready to play her first season as a Terp after sitting out last year due to NCAA transfer rules. She had big shoes to fill. She was going to play third base and replace Alex Schultz, who led the team in every offensive category in 2010. Hannafin, though, doesn't want to compare herself to Schultz.
I mean, the things I heard about her, she was a great power hitter, and I don't really consider myself a power hitter, but it comes. But I think the power that I have, and then I have some speed, I think those together kind of helps me in my hitting a lot.
And even if you compare the two, Hannafin has done more than fill in for Schultz. In 17 games this year, she's hitting .419 with 3 doubles, 4 home runs, and 11 RBIs. But even with the offensive production, did she find it easy to join a team so tight-knit as this one?
I mean, at first it was overwhelming because, like, the campus is huge. But I played with Carrie Hickey, like, in summer ball before, and then I had played against a bunch of these girls, so I knew their faces, and a lot of them had transferred here, too, so they were all nice, so they made it easy.
Hannah Finn's bat has been a big boost to Maryland. But just as important has been true freshman Ashley Checkner's dominant pitching. The top prospect has lived up to the hype so far with a 3.12 ERA, 39 strikeouts in 34 innings, and a meager 181 batting average against. Important to her development has been pitchers Kendra Knight and Carrie Hickey, who themselves finished last season 10th in the nation in ERA.
I've learned a lot about not showing any emotion or anything, and just like having like confidence and stuff, and knowing how to like throw batters and being in different situations to how to handle that.
Checkner's play has eased the burden on Knight and Hickey, and head coach Laura Watton sees Checkner as right on the level of the veterans, who were both highly touted recruits as well.
Kendra didn't have the best freshman year. Kendra's better year came in her sophomore year and then in this year, but she's a lot like Carrie. Carrie came out with a lot of swagger and just a lot of confidence coming straight out of high school. And, you know, Ashley had a lot of, earned a lot of accolades through high school and in South Carolina. And so she knows success.
And now with three great pitchers to turn to on any given night, Watton sees the luxury that she now has to balance.
It just depends. We try to really scout our opponents and really pitch our strengths against their weaknesses. But you know, for the most part, it's you know, it's great to have the two, and then adding Ashley has just been it's just been a huge benefit, and it's a huge bonus.
And while she's showing few signs of difficulty so far, Checkner is still less than a year removed from high school, and is still taking it game by game as she tries to improve.
I realize that it's definitely a lot, you know, tougher than high school. I'm not gonna have like 20 strikeouts a game like I did in high school, but I have to rely on my defense a little bit more. But I still want to strike everyone out, but I just know that they're going to be good hitters, and I have to go after every single one of them.
Though she may not be getting those 20 strikeout games right now, she is certainly on the path to having some very soon. From Taylor Stadium, I'm Tyler Radke.
The Terps split their home opener doubleheader Wednesday night behind 6 2/3 strong innings from Checkner and 2 hits and 1 RBI from Hannafin. They improved to 9-8 on the season and continue this weekend at the USF Under Armour Showcase in Tampa, Florida. Our producer is Jason Murphy. Our editor is Brian Hoffman. Technical production by Devin Miller. Assistant producers Emily Jacobs, Tyler Radicke, and Kristen Foka. Listen to us online anytime at www.twe.umd.edu. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Ken Gartner. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to TERP Weekly Edition, a presentation of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism at the University of Maryland, in cooperation with 88.1 FM WMUC in College Park.